Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business, where we're talking about the different things that go on inside the game of football. This week, we obviously got our two Super Bowl matchups in the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos. And then, obviously, since it's Senior Bowl week, a lot of additional people were down there in Mobile, Alabama, looking for jobs, coaches, players looking for opportunities to get drafted and raise their draft stock, kind of like we saw a couple years ago with Eric Fisher going from a mid to late first-round pick to the number one overall pick. And Neil Stratton was down there in Mobile, Alabama. How's it going, Neil? How was your trip there to the South?
It was good, Justin. It was a little cold, a little rainy. But it's always a little unpredictable, I guess, weather-wise. But it's always a great week because everyone's there. It's probably the best week of the year, I think, from a football standpoint, from a football business standpoint especially, because so much access, so many people there, so many new people to meet, so many players, great players to see.
Gotcha. And, coming out of the week, down there in practice, any guys player-wise that, stood out or that scouts were talking about or the buzz there in Mobile?
Well, I mean, I guess I wish I could – I wish I had some real sleepers for you, but based on what I saw, the players that looked good to me were especially two players kind of stood out. Carson Wentz, the quarterback from North Dakota State, I think he – seems to move really well for a guy as big as he is, and can throw well on the run with good accuracy. And Braxton Miller, I think, is a guy from Ohio State, wide receiver, is a guy that kind of proved that he's more than just a quarterback. He can play, wide receiver, he can catch it. Again, I think that's kind of what a lot of people have been saying, but that's what I saw in my own eyes as well. There's so many things to see and so many things down there and players to monitor. It's kind of hard to really pull top players from everything unless you're really focused on a couple. But that's what I saw, and that was kind of my experience this week.
Gotcha. And then from the business side, what was the kind of the news and notes and anything interesting come out just on a football business side down there in Mobile?
Well, I think there's a lot of discussion of the direction that the business is going, and I think how much so many agencies are essentially starting to kiss off the first contract and taking a less on the first deal with the understanding that they get a guarantee on the second deal. And I guess creative ways that the big firms are trying to lock in players for the second, more lucrative deal that can actually be negotiated. Whereas given the way the CBA is now, that first deal is really kind of paint by numbers. You're kind of locked into the slot, and there's not a lot of wiggle room, not a lot of negotiation that can take place because the second deal has become such a big part of making money in this business for the player as well as for the agent. I have seen a lot of agencies that are, again, really putting all their chips on that second deal, taking a lot less on the first one, and it's really sent shockwaves through the business because there aren't many agencies that are big enough that they can just deal from the money they already have on the first one, pay a marketing bonus or a signing guarantee, take less on the life of the deal of the first 4 to 5 years, and then just hope for the second deal. I mean, obviously, NFL careers are short, and on average, about 3.5 years, so a second deal is certainly not guaranteed, but I guess if you sign enough players that are in the top 100, then you've improved your chances. And if you can really lock all those guys down, then you've got an opportunity to make money on the second deal. Again, that's all kind of contingent on it being a 3% deal and a number of other factors, including getting to that second deal. I think the difficulty is, and I think where there's a wild card and where there's big risk, in addition to the general nature of the game and injuries and performance and all those kind of things, there are no guarantees to get to it, but also that the NFLPA is really aggressively starting to try to help veterans negotiate their own deals in free agency and not use agents as much. So a lot of risks, but and this game has always been, especially on the agent side, full of risks, But this it's a bit of a game changer this year with some of the bigger firms, you know, cutting fees and trying to sign more players and then hoping that those players, again, get to that second contract.
When you say cutting fees, are you alluding to taking 1 or 2% there on those, charging that percentage there? Is that what you're alluding to?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't explain myself better. 3% is the standard deal for those people who don't know that. But 3% is not mandatory, and anyone can move it down to 2% or 1% or even 0.5% or even 0, I guess, depending on what you negotiate. And I think as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, it was very rare for a player not to sign for 3%, or at least far rarer than it is now. And now, when you're talking about the top 50 players and maybe even the top 100, there's an awful lot more wiggle room and a lot more players that are trying to cut deals and not just ready to go with whatever the agent recommends and aren't looking to spend that kind of money anymore. Complicating matters further is that a lot of players don't understand their marketing value, and they think because they play in the NFL and they wear the helmet and what have you, that there are a lot of off-the-field opportunities for them. And there are a lot of different factors involved that can kind of affect that, where they're playing, what position they play, the city, the performance of the team, all those kinds of things. So while they're looking for their agents to go out and find money for them off the field over the life of the contract, most or many agents can't do that. So they're left with the option of, do they go and pay someone a fee monthly to handle their marketing for them and hope they can find deals, or do they wait and hope that their agent goes out and finds something, or they charge them the standard 15 to 20% on whatever they can find? And again, I think everyone's kind of trying to figure out exactly how to skin that cat. And so there's a lot of flux there and a lot of things that could be happening that we'll have to, again, kind of monitor and watch to see really what takes hold.
Well, yeah, I mean, getting to that standpoint, you know, some marketing firms, you know, are only looking for the guys who are going to make dollars, and that's the guys who touch the ball. That's the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. And,
yep,
you know, that's something that, you know, hey, if you're not one of those positions, you've got to be special to get some marketing deals. You've got to be a J.J.
Yeah.
Watt, you know, to be able to get some far as off the field stuff there. Now, hey, can you get some, you know, can you get an apparel deal where they will, you know, Under Armour, Nike will give you, you know, apparel? Yeah. Can you get, you know, some autograph signings locally there, you know, where you can expect to get, you know, a couple thousand dollars here, a couple thousand dollars there? Yeah. But in regards to any type of big time, you know, dollar figures there, unless you're a quarterback, receiver, or running back, you know, the likelihood that you're going to get that there. Now, and then also in regards to, hey, I mean, we've all, you know, and on this show and you know, we've talked about, hey, the percentage is going to go from 3 to 2. So, you know, now maybe those bigger firms are just kind of, you know, getting ready for, you know, that 2% to pop in and kind of being able to, you know, start that way here, and then using that as a marketing tool this year to kind of go in there, knowing that next year it's going to be mandatory there, and looking like, hey, they're doing the guys a favor. And, you know, maybe that was what happened. I don't know. Just speculating there. You know, but I do think, you know, we are going to see people come up with some creative, you know, ways there and different things like, you know, that in regards to, you know, signing players there. And, hey, if you do take, you know, if you basically take that first contract as a wash, you know, and you just do the math there, you've got to sign a number of players. And maybe that's where, you know, you had mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the show that CAA had signed a number of, you know, players, 30 players in regards to not something that they normally had done there. So maybe that's, you know, where they're kind of getting their strategy there, you know. But again, I do think, you know, that 2%, you know, gonna come in, it's gonna pass, it's gonna hurt, you know, the industry at a whole that people don't necessarily realize in regards to the trainers, you know, anybody that kind of deals with that makes money during this off season there, the you know, chiropractors, the different people that you had, you know, had mentioned there. It's just, there's just not going to be enough dollars to be able to go ahead and do that there. So, you know, and the standpoint of, hey, if you're looking for a lending institute, you know, they're willing to do a lot of things for top 100, top 150 players. They'll give agents and players a ton of money to, you know, and you, you know, as far as, and not a high interest rate to do that. But once you start getting past the 150 mark, you're looking at not a lot of people are interested, you know, in that guy there. So I just think we're going to see the back end of the draft, the non-senior bowl guys, you know, non-East-West Shrine Game guys. Those are the guys that's going to affect the most, and those are the agents who constantly represent the 5th, 6th, 7th PFA type guys. Those are the guys that are going to affect the most, and those are the guys that have to get creative to be able to stay into the, you know, in the industry.
Yeah, I agree. Everyone's creative, I guess, is the key word. Everyone's kind of have to use their imagination to really decide how they're going to do this and what they're going to do with it. Had a lot of conversations with mid-sized firms as well as big firms about what that looks like. One of the possible ramifications for firms that decide they're going to cut it to 1% and play for that second deal, however, is that if they've already got a number of veterans that are on 3% deals or even 2% deals, how are they going to, you know, what's their reaction going to be? And I think that's another big wild card, because some of these veterans, you know, again, they're getting ready for second contracts. They can fire their guy at any time. They don't have to show cause. And why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they look for someone that will cut fees and that they feel will be a little more fair, and especially if they're not happy with maybe the amount of money that's come in off field or any number of things. If you've got a lot of veterans and they're already headed to a second deal, and now it becomes public that these players that haven't proved themselves, that haven't even set foot on an NFL field yet, are getting essentially the benefit of something they didn't get, that the veterans themselves didn't get, what's the answer? And I think that's another question that firms are going to have to answer if they're going to go in this direction, because you really don't want to make your veterans unhappy. You kind of cut off your nose to spite your face if you sign a bunch of rookies at a reduced fee, and then you wind up losing all the veterans that you have that are kind of helping you pay to cover those training fees and signing bonuses and what have you. So it is a very complicated issue. There are a lot of layers to it, and it's going to be something that I think the league, that big firms and small firms alike will continue to wrestle with and try to sort out over the next year, 2 years, or maybe even more. I mean, it's an ever-changing business, that's for sure.
Well, hey, I mean that's one thing that you know Drew Rosenhaus has been famous for in regards to, you know, doing 1% deals with his veterans, you know, and you know, so I think, you know, that's where people are going to have to say, hey, I'll do my vets that I'm doing second contracts for less than I'm, you know, doing my rookies, you know, mm-hmm. and that, because that is out there, and you know, and people do expect, hey, you know, to if you're gonna charge these guys who haven't, you know, less than what you're, you know, going to do now, why am I getting a break? Because I do know, right, you know, agents that have said that stuck hard with, you know, not going less than 3% for the rookies, because they do charge their veterans, you know, 3%, you know, and say, right, hey, how can I go and tell this rookie that I'm going to cut his fee if I don't take this Pro Bowler, you know, guy, and I've always charged him 3%. I can't, you know, that can't get out there, because then I'm going to lose my guy who's made me a lot of money over the, you know, over, yeah, the years there. So, I think, you know, the NFLPA is, you know, and obviously they're getting in this because they, you know, have an agenda to try to protect the players and do different things there. I think they're going to cause more of a problem than they realize, you know, when it's all said and done. But it's never going to go back from, you know, charging 2% to then popping up to the value of 3%. Now, one thing I do know that some people in the CFL do is, you know, as far as charging those guys, is they'll charge them a like $1,500, you know, management fee, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with what their salary is. And I could see some people doing that, going, hey, you know, I'm going to charge you, you know, this. et cetera, there to try to get some of their expenses back, paid for there. So, like I said, it's something that's there and it's interesting and it's something that will be continued debate as we kind of go forward and until this thing is passed or fails, what I think we all expect it to be passed there. So where do you see, obviously the All-Star Game cycle is done. We had a lot of pay-for-play All-Star games, the three that were down there in South Florida, the College Gridiron Showcase, where it wasn't a game, but, they actually had their players pay, there. We had the three traditional games, the NFLPA game, the Shrine Game, and the Senior Bowl. Where do you see the future of All-Star games going, Neil?
Well, I think that based on the conversation that I had with one of the organizers of the showcase that was in Bedford when I was this week when I was driving home from Mobile, as a matter of fact, as well as the discussions I had with the organizer of the Tropic Bowl and several other conversations, I really think, number one, the market for All-Star games remains kind of high for cities that would like to get into the business and like to have the cachet of the NFL associated with a game that they would host. And so I think that's still something that interests cities, and that's still something that is not going away. But I think, again, as it gains traction, that you don't have to pay this premium of travel and even lodging to bring in players that are worthy of being looked at by NFL teams, then more and more are going to start to maybe take that away. They're going to look for ways to reduce that. And I think you're probably going to see more games played. I think, obviously the NFL requires that. So, like the Tropic Bowl, they had a game. The College Gridiron Showcase didn't have a game where fans came in, but they had something to kind of satisfy that requirement. So you may see the games remain, but again, I think most of these organizers are trying to cut costs by reducing the travel, by limiting the travel, by limiting the lodging, and that's going to continue. I've heard of potentially three new venues for games for the 2017 cycle. And while that's still a good ways off and they're still kind of kicking the tires and trying to decide if that's going to be something that they really want to do, I'd say at least one of those comes back. And then, Justin, as you know, as you've discussed, the Hula Bowl perhaps will be a part of the 17 cycle, or at least maybe not the Hula Bowl per se, but a return game that's in Hawaii. Man, having run the Hula Bowl in '08, that I can tell you that travel and lodging for that game were considerable. I think just the travel itself was approached $100,000, and then the lodging was probably another fee that rivaled that, and maybe even exceeded that because of the venue we chose. I don't think we chose very wisely there. And so anytime you're going to bring players in, you've got to be really smart, really mind the money. And given the games that were able to succeed this year with their business models, I think others are going to duplicate that. I still see the big three giving the deluxe treatment and covering all the expenses and, not leaving players with any kind of, bill. But if they continue to see these other games doing well and having players drafted, then they may change as well. The thing about the College Gridiron Showcase is they brought 175 draft eligible players in. I think we've discussed that. So they're going to have a lot of players drafted. When the big three games come back and see how many players were drafted, and when, quite frankly, they hear the scouts complain about the talent level, which always drives me crazy because I know how much work goes into these games, then they're probably going to say, hey, why are we killing ourselves? Why are we being heroes? Why don't we join the rest of the pack and not write these big checks anymore? And it's really hard to say why they would continue to do that.
Yeah, and when you say, you know, satisfy the NFL in regards to a game, you know, what do you mean there? I mean, as far as the NFL wants a game, because I mean, everything I always knew is that, hey, they, you know, no scouts stuck around. It wasn't that important. They always wanted the practice. The one-on-ones is what always, you know, when I was involved with the TVN game, that's what always they always complained to us in regards to, especially one year when one coach wasn't doing any one-on-ones, and they're like, what the heck's going on? Like, we need these one-on-ones to be able to evaluate. So, you know, kind of, could you elaborate on that comment there in regards to the game standpoint?
It's not the scouts that want the game. You're right, Justin. I mean, very few teams stick around for the game. Some do, but most don't. But it's the NFL that has a requirement that these All-Star Weeks have a game at the end because it separates them. I think they're very sensitive about sending scouts or any kind of evaluators to combines or to paid workouts. Although they, ironically, the NFL does have its own regional combines now, I think they want to separate these All-Star games from the combine format. And the way they do that is by having an official game at the end of the week, or at least some kind of contest pitting the two teams against each other so they can say, hey, this isn't a combine. We're not endorsing this event. We're not, you know, this is very separate from the idea of what CFL teams do where they, you know, come in and have players pay $100 cash and then they work out for 2 hours or what have you, and then they sign players or don't sign players. And so this is something that originates up on Park Avenue in New York and in the main offices rather than with the teams, the rank and file scouts themselves. This is something that kind of goes to a little higher level. It's just kind of a rule that they have. Now, maybe we'll see them relax that at some point. But again, the NFL always has these little hurdles and kind of weird likes and preferences and things they make games do for the right to put on All-Star games so NFL teams can come in and evaluate them. It's kind of funny, really. But when you're as big as the NFL is, then I guess you get to kind of move however you want to, shall we say.
Gotcha. So, you know, definitely that's, you know, we'll see. I think the All-Star game thing is it's with, unless you're the Senior Bowl, which the city of Mobile, you know, really embraces that. And the NFL,
absolutely,
obviously, you know, they fit a lot of that bill there. And that's what, you know, they provide the two coaching staff is, you know, the
right,
the trainers, the video people and different things like that. And so when you're just talking about putting an All-Star game on like you have and I have regards to that's some big time expense. And if you don't have to deal with that expense, that becomes very, you know, nice. And obviously the Senior Bowl is the only one that the NFL directly does that for. The Shrine Game,
right,
they have to bring their own coaches in. Obviously, they brought in, you know, Charlie Weiss, you know, this past year, and, you know, same thing with the NFLPA game. You know, they had Mike Martz and, you know, and the other coaches that they had brought in there, Mike
right,
Holmgren as well. So, I mean, I think that's – and then that's an expense that you have to eat as that organizer there. So, you know, the coaching staff, you know, becomes just a cost because not only do you have to pay them something – but you have to fly them in, you have to take care of the lodging and take care of their food, you know, there while they're there. So,
right,
you know, I think there is, you know, cities that, you know, of a, you know, want that prestige and different things like that. But in regards to really getting behind it on a money standpoint, just from being in many different cities with the TVN game from Allen, Texas, to San Antonio, to El Paso, working with the Players All-Star Classic with John Murphy down there in Little Rock, Arkansas. You know,
mm-hmm,
yeah, the officials in those cities, oh, they always talk, you know, great things and, oh, we could do this and, oh, we should, you know. But when it comes down to then getting that, it's harder than they realize, I think, just the standpoint of, you know, getting the money and getting these patrons and these local businesses to buy in. Yeah, there's prestige,
right,
and it's great, and hey, the tourists, you know, the tourist boards and the you know, the commissioners that are involved in that, you know, that that's, you know, exciting to talk to those people because they're pumped up and they're excited and they want your game there. And You know, but at the end of the day, it's these local businesses, these sponsors that then help bring in these guys. And unless you
right.
have a Reese's like the Senior Bowl does or an Under Armour like the NFL Combine does, you know, really to push some money in that there, that it becomes a difficult standpoint there. So I really think we'll see, you know, some more of these pay-for-play, you know, all-star games and kind of doing some, you know, research or to reach out to probably a half a dozen agents that I had dealt with the TV in game going, hey, would you, you know, what's your guys' stance on that? And they all had a, you know, a different interesting, you know, take there, there on the standpoint. And we used to say, hey, especially on last minute standpoints, if we needed a replacement, I always would have agents saying, oh, if you replace me with this kid, I'll fly him in, you know, I'll fly him in, I'll get him here, you know. So
sure.
I think when it comes push up, come to shove, the guys want to see their players taken there. And, you know, and more people kind of getting this, the NFL agency business, you know, and it's a turnstile business where you track it better than anybody in regards to the agents that go in the business and the agents that kind of go out of the business, you know, there.
Right.
And we always see a good percentage of them coming in and going out. So I think we'll see more of these pay for play all-star, you know, games showcase, you know, kind of evolve just on a standpoint of, hey, it's needed. And it was at least enough success that there was NFL scouts there that, you know, you don't have to pay for everything to get, you know, get the players in there for the scouts to kind of come in there.
Well, the thing, Justin, here's the thing that's kind of funny. I've heard that, you know, NFL, especially NFL central offices, they always come in and they put these games through the ringer and they make sure that they check all their boxes and they do all the things that they require. And, you know, that's great. But it's all kind of a charade because even though these teams come in, the scouts come in and they complain about the talent level and they complain about how things are run and they may not like the city where the game is held or any number of things. Ultimately, this is a showcase for the scouts, and it's one more chance for them to evaluate players that may have slipped under the radar, which does happen, or players that they weren't sure on, and this gives them one last time to really decide, is this a guy that I like or not? It's a smorgasbord for these NFL teams, and these are, again, NFL teams that are making millions of dollars in profit. And so why wouldn't they go out and send at least a low-level scout or an assistant or someone along those lines to these games to kind of give it some level of official, I guess, some level of legitimacy or authenticity or whatever you want. So, quite frankly, the bar is pretty low when it comes to the NFL's interest. I mean, they may stomp their foot and shake their fist and say, hey, you better do this or better do that, but at the end of the day, they're foolish if they don't take advantage of this. It always amazes me when an NFL team chooses not to send at least one representative to a game. Why wouldn't they do that? What in the world do they have to lose by sending a scout down, putting him in a hotel for 3 days and feeding him? What if he meets one guy, sees one guy that he likes or at least one guy that sparks interest? So you get the NFL, even though the juniors leave early, the top players don't make it to these games. It's still a big plus for them, even though we're seeing, you know, even the number three game only had 10 players drafted last year, whereas the first year I ran a game in 2007, our number four game, I think, had 20 players drafted. It's getting harder and harder maybe to get the top level talent in, but you're still going to get talented players in there. And if you're the NFL, you've got to see this as a bonus. And so I think even as All-Star games start to be a little smarter about spending money, still going to have NFL participation. And if they've got scouts, and they're going to have agents that want to send players, and they're going to have plenty of players. And so those three, you know, the real benefactors of these games, the NFL, the scouts, the agents, and the players themselves will still continue to have a platform to for their talents. So I think long-term, I think there still is – a big future for these games. It's just, you know, it's going to change. The face of it's going to change, and the way things are done are certainly going to be changing, probably in a good way, probably in a smarter way.
Yeah, definitely. So Neil, another great show here. You know, good to talk about the All-Star Games and the Senior Bowl. And, here in a couple of weeks, we'll be down, at the Combine. So look forward to another great week of Inside the League and stuff that's going to go on here. So then we'll talk next week. Whether it's Wednesday or Friday, we'll figure that out when it's down the road.
I know. Well, I appreciate everyone being flexible in their listening habits. But another fun week. Justin, thanks for having me, and see you out on the trail, buddy.
Later, man.